Okay, so my name's Deanna, but most all people call me Dee. It's just shorter, not three syllables, one. I am a grateful member of Al-Anon family groups. My home group is in Moline at Riverside Church. We meet Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. I also attend a Tuesday night Zoom meeting with another fellowship called Families Anonymous. And probably one of my favorite things to do is show up at the Abbey Treatment Center on Sundays at noon. And we host a outreach program there. And so you can find me at the Abbey Treatment Center just about every single Sunday. I am going to start with, we have daily readers in Al-Anon, and I don't know what your history is with Al-Anon, or some of you maybe have never attended an Al-Anon meeting or don't know much about it, but it is for people affected by the disease of alcoholism, and we have daily readers. This is Courage to Change. It's my favorite, and it's my favorite page. It's super highlighted and has a heart up at the top. I most emphatically told my family that their bickering was making our newly sober loved one nervous, and this might cause her to start drinking again. I was shocked when I was told just as emphatically, "Well, let her." I realized that I was still trying to make everything smooth and easy for the alcoholic, because I hadn't accepted that I was just as powerless over alcoholism in sobriety as I had been during the active years. It was then that I truly discovered how beautifully letting go and letting God can work. When I fully understood how powerless I was over the situation, I was able to trust that the alcoholic has her own higher power and that together they can work out her future. I felt like a new person because I was free of the constant need to watch over her, free to live my own life. I care about the alcoholic in my life more than I can say. I wish her health, happiness, and sobriety, but I cannot hand these things to her. She and her higher power are in charge of that. I can only love her, and when I stop to think about it, that is enough. Today's reminder, today I choose to place my trust in that higher power, knowing that all is well. If we supply the willingness, God supplies the power. I think that, well, first, this isn't going to be linear. I am going to be all over the place. I can tell that already, so I want to thank Cassidy for being my outreach person and contacting me. She called me on the phone. I was on my lunch break sitting at Los Agaves with a coworker, and Kel had told me I might be tapped to be the Al-Anon speaker. I do not like speaking. It's pretty terrifying for me. But nobody had called, so I thought, off the hook for that. And then Cassidy called and asked, and, you know, I've been taught to say yes, although someone told me recently that you can say no. It's not saying no to your program. It's just saying no to the person, but I didn't know that then. So I said yes, and I'm always thinking, well, that's months ahead. Like, there's so much time between now and then, I don't even think about it, and then, you know, it starts rolling around, and for me, as that rolls around, there's a lot of fear. So I had to really work on that. And so my goal for today is to do this being relaxed and to not get caught up in the fear. So I was sharing this with my daughters yesterday, who are both sitting in the audience. And by the way, today it's a small group. I know over half of you because you're here to support me. So thank you very much. I've got family members. I've got new special people in my life. My sponsor's here. I've got a sponsee here. My daughter's sponsor is here, Erica, who I got to hear last night. So there's a lot of love here. I have nothing to fear. But I have these memories of being a little girl and being put in situations, being on stage. It was dance, and I remember this still today, and I froze, and I just stood there, and everyone's moving around me, and I'm just standing there. So I'm telling the girls about that, and tears start to roll, and I'm like, wow, that is still in there. That is still in there. So maybe this for me is healing those old wounds, is getting up here and doing this without fear. YPAWs are special to me, very special to me, because I feel like they have, I don't want to say kept my daughter sober, but definitely kept her with AA, being excited about AA, and I think you don't get sober to be miserable. And so, you know, you guys all have a great amount of fun. So they're very special to me. And this isn't Kayla's story, but I just feel I need to talk a little bit about her because it's my reaction to her disease that got me here. It's not her disease that got me here. It's how I responded to her disease. She got sober in Florida, and that's a whole story. I don't know if I'll tell her or not, but I might. And they have a lot of Waipaw there. And then she moved somewhat home, but to the to Iowa City, so not Quad Cities, back in the Quad Cities, but to Iowa City. And there was no young people's meeting in Iowa City. And she's like, I really, really miss the young people meeting. I'm like, well, why don't you do something about it then? And so Des Moines was hosting that year. Iowa City had never hosted a young people's conference. And she went to Des Moines and got the, you know, you guys have a bid committee every time then for the next year. And she brought all that back to Iowa City. And she started a young people's meeting. And it was the first young people's meeting in Iowa City. And they put together a bid committee and they placed a bid and they were the next year's host for Young People's AA Conference. And I attended that just because she was such a huge part of it and I wanted to see what it was all about. And the sobriety countdown, which I would love to go to tonight. And you, if you haven't been to one, Kelly, you need to go because you guys have a blast. I mean, you know, it's a celebration. And so I'm grateful that she has this for her. So I guess I will start with me then. I did grow up in an alcoholic home. I don't think I realized it was. Actually, I know I didn't realize it was. And as I look back, I didn't think it had affected me at all because my dad wasn't, I didn't actually realize he was alcoholic until I was an adult, but he drank every day. And he just wasn't present to us. Like, he never laid a hand on us in a violent way, but he also never laid a hand on me in a loving way. I've never received a hug or a pat on the head or an I love you. He was just kind of emotionally distant. But it was my mom's behavior that was the upsetting in our household because of her reactions to his alcoholism. So I tell people she was a screaming banshee. You know, she was the one who was relating to his disease in unhealthy ways. But she didn't know any better either. So, you know, that's just kind of it. And in Al-Anon, I learned that we play roles in this family disease. And that's what it is. It doesn't just affect the alcoholic. It affects everyone around them. And my role was to be quiet sometimes. I was definitely the peacemaker. I felt like if I took care of mom, maybe these fights wouldn't happen. To me, a normal household was screaming. Things would fly sometimes. A lot of turmoil. And I was a quiet girl. And so just kind of taking it all in. I have one brother. And, you know, what his experience of that, I didn't really know because we never talked about it. You know, we never talked about it. And the first thing I learned that it was to be kept quiet and a secret was I was in kindergarten and I had gone to school that morning and I had talked to my friend and told her about how much my dad drank. And I don't remember what words I used being a six-year-old, but, you know, my dad's drunk all the time. And then I went home and told my mom that I had told Kristen that dad's drunk all the time. And she said, we don't tell people that. We don't talk about that. And so, you know, it's a shame. It's shameful for me at that age. I don't invite kids to my house because I don't know what it's going to look like. And as I start spending the night at kids' house, their houses aren't like that. There's not screaming and throwing and yelling and, you know. So I learned something, but I didn't know what. I just knew that's what our house was like. I have a memory, and this is how I know that perspectives are different. We were a boating family, and we were on the river a lot. And sunshine, boats, and alcohol just kind of go together. And so Dad was, you know, always, you know, intoxicated. And so I'm 8 years old. We're in the boat. It's got a small cabin down below. And I don't know what the explosion is. I just know they're yelling at each other again. And I don't know what Mom says, and I don't know what Dad says, but Dad has a beer in his hand. He takes a drink. She says something, and he spits it in her face. Mom opens up the cooler and starts chucking the beers in the river. And what do? I go down below, and I'm bawling, you know, because, like, this is just horrifying. So it's just this last year, this memory comes to me, and I'm with my brother, and I said, were you there? Like, what? Were you? I don't remember. Were you there? He goes, who do you think was driving the boat? And I'm like, you know, so that's just, and he's 3 years older, so if I'm 8, he's 11. Yeah, and thanks, Erica. I'm so glad you're here because you always laugh at my stuff. yeah, so it's just a snippet, and I don't hold resentment towards them at all. My dad grew up in an alcoholic home. His household, you know, I said my dad never laid a hand on me. That happened to him. Like, his father did lay a hand on him, so I'm so grateful for my dad that familial line of abuse did not happen in my household. And my mom, same. She never had. She's an untreated Al-Anon. Never having known anything about a 12-step program, she was doing her best, he was doing his best. There's no resentment there at all. They're just not. I love them. They're still living. They're 88 and 83 years old. My brother and I, so growing up in this house, having parallel lives, but seeing things from different perspectives, has taught me that it doesn't matter what, I can't tell someone or justify or say that's not how that happened, because that's their truth. And it doesn't matter if it occurred the same way, that is their truth. And so, you know, I have the role of being the perfect one, making things smooth and easy in the house. My brother is the alcoholic, and drank alcoholically from probably day one. He's, stands 5'5". So short guy, slow in school, reading's hard for him. So does that have anything to do with him turning to alcohol and feeling comfortable? I have no idea. What I do know is I don't need to know, and that's what I tell people in Al-Anon. It doesn't matter the why or the how. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. It's how are we reacting to it. But I was always super close to Dave. My brother's name is Dave, because he's my older brother, but I always was his big little sister, helping him with homework, making sure he's okay. And he's part of my story, so that's why I'm touching on him here, is that I was just always taking care of him as I took care of pretty much everybody in my life. That was my role, the caretaker. So where do I want to go? I want to say something about, I'm excited to tell my story, and I'm saying that because yesterday I was talking about the fear factor and not wanting to have fear, and Abby, my youngest daughter, sent me a link about speaking, and the lady said that excitement and fear feel the exact same physically in your body. Your body doesn't know the difference if you're excited or fear, so tell it. I'm excited. So she said, you know, if you have to go speak, say, I'm excited to tell my story. So anytime I feel fear, I'm going to tell you, I'm excited to tell my story. And she said, if you get lost, count to 5 in your head and think of what you want to see at the end. So I might stop and do that. I have a lot of stories to tell. It's just which ones want to come out. So this is my higher power. So since I'm going to higher power, I'll go there. I had no relationship with a higher power. Zero. I was self-reliant to a fault, and self-reliance does not allow for higher power experience. And so I didn't have any of that growing up. We didn't go to church. And that's just a fact. It's not a judgment. It's just a fact. We just didn't. And actually, I'm kind of grateful about that, because I didn't have to unlearn a bunch of stuff. I didn't have to heal a bunch of stuff. I got to decide what that higher power was for me. So I have an alcoholic father, an alcoholic brother. I don't know what Al-Anon is. I would have never gone to Al-Anon for any of that. But I discover that I have an alcoholic daughter, and come hell or high water, I am going to fix this situation. I am going to make it so that she's okay. what happens though is I'm so needing to have everything be perfect, and I recognize this now. So this is another side shoot. I didn't realize that growing up in that alcoholic home had affected me until I was at a family week at a treatment center that Kayla was at, and they had an ACOA meeting, an Adult Children of Alcoholics meeting. And I went to that meeting, and they have a laundry list of 14 traits of what you're like if you grew up in an alcoholic home, and I was all of them. And I was like, I had no clue, because my dad didn't hurt us. He didn't, and he kept his job, and he wasn't what I felt like was a typical alcoholic, not knowing that it comes in all shapes and sizes, and it doesn't all look the same. But I was over-responsible, I was caretaking, I was reactive, and I'm just like, wow, there's a lot of healing here, and maybe I need something to help me, but that's a maybe, and probably not going to go. And I didn't. Went there, learned that, didn't go. I need to get hit over the head multiple times before I do things, and so usually things always come in threes for me. And it wasn't until... It was actually one of Kayla's therapists said to me, and this is so manipulative, she said, you are the key to her change. And number one, you shouldn't lay that on someone. But I also know that she probably knew enough of our story that was going to get me there. I'm not going to go for me, but I will go if it's going to help my child. Hell yeah, I will go if it's going to help my child. So I went, she actually suggested Families Anonymous. We didn't have any local meetings, but they did have an online one, so I got going on that, looked up local Al-Anon meetings, found the Saturday Serenity meeting. I was there in 2 days. Couldn't tell you what that meeting was about. Sorry, I need to look over here. You guys should all be on this side. I sat down at the table. My body started trembling, and the tears began to roll. And because I had been trying to manage this disease for such a long time by myself, feeling overwhelmed, it had affected my life in such a great way that I had no idea, because it had been building over time, doing everything on my own. It was a safe space. And I think I just felt that. Like, to me, higher power is in those rooms. And, I still love that room today. I love that room. I love that space. There's light. It's in a church. It doesn't matter if it's a church or not, but I just, that room holds a special place to me. And I was with people who got it. Like, they understood. Number one, you're talking to people about your alcoholic in your life, and they're giving you advice, or they're telling you this, but they don't know. They have no clue what it's like. And these people did, and they're not going to tell me what to do, but they're going to share their stories, and I'm going to feel known. I felt known in a way that I had never felt known ever. I have learned, I'm still learning. I guess I didn't say how long I've been in Al-Anon. I've been in Al-Anon for 9 years. I have a sober daughter, and so people are like, why you still go to that? Because it has nothing to do with her. It's about me. It has nothing to do with her. Yes, my reaction to her disease got me there, and my reaction to her disease was, okay, this is just an example, to be her alarm clock, to make sure she's up for work. She's in Florida, I'm in Illinois, and I am calling, hey, you got this new job, because her disease, even in sobriety early on, because Erica talked about this last night, about, you can be sober and go to meetings and stuff, but there's a change that can occur that it hadn't occurred for her yet. So she's sober, but I'm still crazy. I'm thinking you get the alcohol out of the picture and everything's good. No. You get the alcohol out of the picture and there is work to do. There is so much work to do. So she's doing her work, but I'm not doing mine because I don't have a program yet. And I'm calling to be the alarm clock. She's not answering. So I've got the house manager's phone number. Of course I do. She's in the sober living house. I call her. Can you wake Kayla up? She needs to get to her job. And she does that, and then Kayla gets a hold of me later. It's like, you can't do that. I got in trouble. I forget what her name was. Julianne or something. It doesn't matter. Yeah, so that's me being enmeshed in her life. Everything. Like, her ringtone makes my stomach roll because it's drama, chaos, and we are so connected and so enmeshed that she tells me everything and I am reacting, responding to everything. I am pretty much at this time going to work and coming home, covers over the head, because it's not her story, but I have permission from Kayla. Her alcoholism leads to suicide attempts, and so I'm always afraid she's going to die, and fear is my major motivator, because I'm afraid she's going to die, and so she is not going to die on my watch, and I'm going to do whatever I can so that she does not die. And that is, I don't want her to be homeless either. I don't want her to lose her jobs. I don't want any of the natural consequences that she needs. So what I learned in Al-Anon is I am enabling freaking all of this, but I don't know anything yet. So, I mean, part of my work in the 12 steps is to forgive myself. And that took a lot of work, a whole lot of work. Okay, I'm excited to tell my story. I don't even know where I went with the, I did want to acknowledge Abby because I wrote things. I learned I'm a writer through, Al-Anon. I had no idea that I know how to write until, I need to do Abby before I did that. I wrote a thing about Abby and it was called The Other Daughter, and I let the girls read them before I came and said, do you mind if I share this? And Kayla said, I don't like that you called her the other daughter. And Abby said, I don't own that. Woo, good Abby. And I said, it's because in Al-Anon, people thought I only had one kid, because all I talk about is the one kid all the time. And so it's like I have an other daughter. She's not my other daughter. She's my daughter, but the other daughter, because the other daughter is the one who does all the right things and doesn't cause problems and lives life under the radar and so gets forgotten. And she's a part of my amends too, is I'm so sorry that I was that parent for you, that I was so focused on your sister that it's not that I ever forgot about her, but Abby makes it easy. Abby makes everything easy. So she was a part of this writing thing. So I don't know. I was at Al-Anon does some fun things too. And there's a monastery. We would get together on the weekends and have like an Al-Anon weekend, nothing to do with the monastery, but that's where we did it at. And at that weekend, someone spoke and they talked about, writing gratitude, and that they had their sponsees, send them a list of like 10 things they were grateful for every day. And I thought, that's great, because I had a sponsee. And I had only been in the program about 6 months when this woman asked me to sponsor her. And I was like, I'm on step 5, you know? And I didn't know if I could sponsor her. So I didn't want to ask my sponsor at the time because I was afraid she was going to tell me no. And I really wanted to do it. So I called Kayla and was like, hey, you know, you work the steps. What do you think? She goes, do you want to do it? I said, yeah. And so anyway, I have this sponsee. I'm usually just like one or two steps ahead of her. And I say, let's do this gratitude email thing. Let's hold each other accountable. And because I know I am a rule follower and disciplined, and if I have to say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And so if we do it together, we'll do this. So it starts out with 5 things I'm grateful for. That's all I do every day. And then I start adding, hey, let's take something from our literature and write some thoughts about it. Pick something, you know, so that way I'm holding myself accountable for reading my daily readers. And this goes on for years. Like, I end up doing this for years, and I end up writing. Like, it becomes a journal of sorts. And I realized through that my higher power spoke to me through writing. I would get answers. I would heal things. I would cry. I would, you know, it ended up being a beautiful experience for me. I'm excited to tell my story. Okay, I guess I'll go to some steps then. Admitted I am powerless over alcohol, that my life had become unmanageable. Isn't it interesting that Al-Anon works the exact same 12 steps that AA does? There's one word difference, and it's in step 12. We carry the message to others, and you carry your message to alcoholics. I find that fascinating. But there is such wisdom and such ability to heal in these 12 steps. And I, right off the bat, was like, I'm getting a sponsor. I want to work these 12 steps, because to me, it was the answer. I don't know if I knew what the answer to what, but it was an answer, and I was going to blow through them. And I did. And I mean, I'm going to never judge how anybody works at 12 steps. For me, I had a lot of deep pain in there that needed to be unburdened in step 5, I think, before I could go to other stuff. So I did. I went right through them. And my step 8 experience and on to step 9 with making my amends. I have some stories around that too, that some were easy and the person was like, okay. I don't have any experiences where they didn't accept, but I do have some that were on my amends list that I didn't think I'd ever be able to make. One, I didn't know where the person lived, and one, they didn't speak to me. And so I knew enough that I can put that in higher power hands, and so I did. And I would pray about it all the time, and not just pray, I would send that person love, because maybe a softening of the heart needed to happen, or I just knew it wasn't me anymore, that there was a power greater than myself that could do this work. So I'm jumping again to my higher power, and I remember where I was at. I had no relationship, but I knew it was pivotal. I knew it was important to have one. But I didn't know where to find it, so I started going to churches because I thought that's where I was going to find it, and that lasted for about a year, and I did find something there, but it wasn't what I was looking for, and so I started a God journal, and I began writing to my higher power and saying, you know, I want to know you better. I don't know how that is going to be. I knew meditation was super important too, because I had read that most all spiritual practices have some meditation to them. So I just kept asking, help me to find a way to meditate, help me to find you, help me to communicate, because I have a memory of, I don't even know what happened that day. I just was super at my wit's end, trying to manage, manipulate, and control a disease I have no control over, worried about my daughter. It's starting to manifest physically for me. Like, I feel like I'm having a heart attack sometimes. I lose weight when I'm stressed. I don't eat. All these things are going on. And I cracked one day, and I was on my kitchen floor, and I looked up. Why do we look up for our higher power? I don't know, but I look up for my higher power and say, I can't do this anymore. You know, like, God help me, literally, God help me. So it was the first time. It was my first time asking for help from a power greater than myself. And then things started coming to me. I used to get this monastery newsletter, and I would put it in the recycling. I never looked at that thing. It always went in the recycling. And for whatever reason, I get this nudge. And I know now my higher power can nudge me. I understand that now. I didn't understand that then. And I open this, and I'm looking through it. And there is a retreat on, it's not a retreat, it's a workshop on a silent form of meditation called centering prayer. And so I'm like, I'm doing that. I'm going to contact this sponsee of mine, and we're going to do that together. And so that was the beginning of learning the practice of meditation for me. I think that as I became open, I believe my higher power has always been with me, but I never acknowledged it. So it can't work well with me until I'm open to that. And so I just the writing thing, realizing that my higher power can communicate through the written word, was mind-blowing to me. I also was asking people about their God experience, because I didn't have any, and I'm trying to mine you for yours. And I called my Aunt Pud in Missouri, because I know she goes to church. You know, what's this God thing for you? You know, I am a dental hygienist, so I've got patients in my chair. If I know you go to church, I'm asking you, what is your God experience? I mean, because I don't think I'm capable of it. I don't think so. My brother, when he was 40 years old, drinking very alcoholically on his motorcycle, got in a really serious accident. He had a brain injury. He was in a coma for 3 weeks. And I did believe in God, but I didn't believe God knew me or heard me. So I had someone come pray for my brother at the hospital that I knew went to church and prayed, because then I figure he must know God and his prayers are more powerful and mine don't mean anything because I don't have this relationship. And so Uncle Jerry came and prayed around my brother, and that's how I thought it worked. I just didn't think it could be in me to have that or to know that, until I cried out and became open and searching. And I believe what I love about the 12 steps, it's a God of our own understanding, because mine is not the same as yours. I can guarantee you that. As you know, I'm using the pronoun it. Most people wouldn't do that. Might even think it's sacrilegious, but for me, it is a force. It's a power that is... I was crying on the way here in gratitude, because this higher power has changed my life. And I am so grateful. This higher power has given me people to help me heal, to learn. I learned that all these situations that I'm going through and experiencing, they are not punishment. They are growth. It is all about growth. This life of mine is about growing, and I get the lessons that I need, and my lessons are different than yours. And so I don't judge what people are going through or what they're doing, because it's what they need. I get control issues. Situations in my life are all, I get an alcoholic daughter. You know, what is the one thing I love that I can't control is a huge test. And then as I get good at releasing them, because my higher power gives me insights into this stuff, usually when I'm walking in nature. So trees are my space. Nature is what I adore and love. And so I take myself to the woods often. And when I'm walking in those woods, my higher power speaks to me, and it shows me things. It tells me things. It's, don't compare your life to anybody else's. Don't compare your children's life to anybody else's, because it's silly. It's useless. We're all here to learn different stuff. Why would I ever compare what she's going through or he's going through? I don't know what people need, and I learned that. I don't know what my children need to experience, and all those years of being her safety net and running around trying to catch her so she doesn't fall was harming her. I didn't know that. Part of the step work of forgiveness. So those are things my higher power tells me. I learned that nothing changes if nothing changes. And I can't change anybody else. I can only change me. And I tell people that there's no guarantee if you change, your child is going to get sober or your loved one is going to get sober, but it gives them a chance. And I think that if I had continued the cycle, never found my program, that I don't know. I mean, I can't say if Kayla would be sober today or not. I mean, I don't know, but I do know that me saying no and stopping all the things that I was doing allowed her the opportunity to do that. And so it's not a program about our alcoholic loved ones. It is, but it isn't. I mean, it's what got me there, but it's about me. It's about, I have always been so rigid, needing things to be just a certain way. Why? Because it makes me feel safe, because I don't like disorder, because I lived in disorder. And so for me, Like, I need things to be like that. Well, that's not pleasant to be around. It's not pleasant to live with. So, you know, flow is a word that I thrive for today. Is I want to flow. I have plans. They're always tentative. I don't like to have it all scheduled out. I like to be able to maneuver and flow. That's huge. I mean, that is huge that I am able to do that today. And it's all thanks to this program, these 12 steps that make me look at myself, discover these things. I was not aware of all that stuff. I wasn't aware that who I was and how I was affected had changed me greatly, but I can change back. And I say back because I don't think I was born that way. I think I became that way. And so I want to go back to that state. And that is what my higher power wants for me too. So my higher power brings me people to help me and to heal me. And my higher power gives me situations that aren't easy. A lot of times they're really, really hard. In 2020, I had, again, and things come in threes, I found out my brother had cancer. And it was a rare and aggressive cancer, and he needed to go to Iowa City because they couldn't treat it here. So I am my brother's point person. Okay, so he had the brain injury, and he recovered from that, but he was different because it's a brain injury. So I have my brother, but I'm still grieving because it's a different brother. Like, it's my brother, but it's a brain injury brother, so I have to grieve that brother that had this fabulous laugh, this great smile, and when he came out of his coma, we relearned everything. But I'm there, of course, doing all that. I'm at the hospital in the morning, I'm at the hospital at night, and I'm his person, because I am just his person. And so he's got cancer. He can drive, and he can work, but everything's very simple for Dave. And so, you know, I get him to Iowa City, but I have learned to ask for help. I didn't know how to ask for help before, but by now I've learned to ask for help. And so with rides, if I had to work, so I've got that going on. And then it's Christmas Eve, maybe 3 weeks after we're doing some Iowa City stuff. And my youngest daughter, Abby, had bought a house, and we were moving her out of her apartment. And I don't do anything slow. I do everything fast. And I'm carrying things out. She's on the third floor. We're using steps. I'm flying down the steps. I don't know what I did, tripped, messed up my steps, whatever, but I am flying down the steps literally now. And I land on my shoulder. Like, it's a whole landing. And I've got a nice scar here now. I broke it. Like, I broke my shoulder. And laid there trying to figure out, who do I know that can pop this into place? Because I think I dislocated it. because I'm not, you know, I don't take care of myself always in the best of ways. Kayla's there. Abby's not there. Abby's like, Mom, I'm not home, as before I fell. I'm like, we need to get this done. We need to get this done. So she's not even home. Kayla's waiting for me because it's the last thing. It's snowing, Christmas Eve. She can't get in the building because it's a street downtown Moline, and you need a key to get in. The keys are in my pocket. So I'm just laying there, and I'm like, you got to get up, talking to myself, you got to get up. So I still got flights of steps to go down, and I do. Anyway, so I need surgery on this shoulder, and got Dave going on. Higher power just took me out of action. And what, it was like a week later, COVID is just kind of a thing then. People haven't been vaccinated yet. Both my parents are in their 80s, get COVID, and are hospitalized. I mean, this is all, because that's how shit happens for me. It's like, it's never one thing here or there. It's always everything all at once, because I need the damn wake-up call, because I am stubborn and self-reliant. But at this point in time, I've had, let's see, if it was 26 years of Al-Anon, so I know my higher power is talking to me, and I know my higher power is going to help me. I absolutely know that. But this is hard. I mean, this is family stuff. Like, I have learned to release my children. I think I had mastered that. I feel like I got the masters in that, because I trust that there's a plan for them. I trust that with all my being, that every hardship they go through, every single thing is for their highest good. And so I can release them to that because I trust that. And I have built this relationship with my higher power that I know is not only there for me, but is there for them. And it doesn't matter what their relationship with that higher power is, it's there for them. I believe that. So it's like I clear this hurdle, but I got more growth because it's, Erica, you said it last night, like if I'm the same person that I was a year from now, something's wrong. Like I don't want to stay the same. I always want to grow. And so things come, and they're not punishment. They're like, okay, so what is this about? That is always my question. What is this about? I get more lessons in trust. Like, you're going to really trust me here, and you're going to really need to ask for help because you can't do anything for 6 weeks. Or it was longer with surgery. I was off of work for 3 months. And I couldn't go see my parents because it's COVID time, so I can't even go visit those people who I go see every day. And my most tenderest person in my life, my brother, has this, you know, terrible diagnosis. And so it was a week after my surgery. He had a big appointment in Iowa City, and we were meeting the whole team. He had to have a major operation, and they had to put nephrostomy tubes in his back, so they were draining his kidneys, and he had these bags, and I've got, you know, stitches, and I'd been off pain pills for maybe 2 days. It only took him like 3 days. But we go to Iowa City. It's winter, it's cold, it's winter, it's January now. And I was gonna have him drive. I figured with my direction that he could probably drive, but he's got these bags and he doesn't want to drive, so I drive. Yeah. And you know, we're quite the team. He's got bad knees too, so I'm pushing him in a wheelchair and, you know, got this going on. And but my higher power showed up and everything went so smoothly that day, and we wanted to get back by a certain time because it was gonna snowstorm, and we had a spot in the schedule, and everything just came together. It was just like, I felt like the angels were surrounding us. And we got home before the storm. He had a lot of paperwork around that time, and I did too. And this is a part of my story I don't always share because there's shame around it for me. I didn't have any insurance when I fell and broke my shoulder. I did not. I had worked at a dental office for 30 years, and that dentist had retired. And so I'm at a new job. I'd only been there 4 months, and I didn't have any insurance. So I'm looking at a major surgery. I've got my parents in the hospital. I've got my brother with this illness that could kill him. And I'm like, wow. But my higher power provides for me always. So I have a sponsee that lives in New York, and I met her through Families Anonymous because it's an online meeting, and I had shared enough of my story on that site that she connected with me, and we have parallel lives. She and I do, so parallel. She's an attorney, and so it's New Year's Eve. I haven't told people. I'm just thinking I'm screwed financially. I have savings, but it's probably going to wipe it all out. And also how I'm in this situation, I'm 53 years old and I don't have insurance. Like, you know, how that felt so shameful to me. And I don't want to tell people that, but I told her that, and she's like, you could get Medicaid. And I'm like, it wasn't even a thought in my head that I would qualify for that because I have a good profession and I make money, but I'm not making money right now. I'm not even working. And so she is my angel. She gets on the phone on New Year's Eve and we start calling the Medicare. She's just like that. Like, you know, we all have gifts and talents and hers is that. And so she three-ways us in. We get the lady on the phone, who's working on New Year's Eve, who figures they're on New Year's Eve. And then she's like, nope, you need this number. And so we three-way that in, Julie and Atkinson, Illinois, I don't know. And she's, we have to leave a voice message. And I'm just like, yeah, she's not going to get back to us. She does. Same day, gets back to us. And my friend, her name is Rondi, and she's using the words, this is, we need to expedite this. This is a catastrophic injury, you know, just like all the things I wouldn't even know to say. And I tell you, she also has a brother who is not just a radiologist, but he's a radiologist with NYU that specializes in bones. And she gets on the phone and calls the hospital for me to get my x-rays forwarded to her brother, which they wouldn't allow me to do, but she knows the things to say and gets. So Mitch gets on the phone with me, with her. We're looking at it together. Because they did, the ER said I didn't need surgery. They just said, but they didn't know what they were talking about. He looks at it and sends me a picture of a normal one and mine. And he said, this is really bad. He said, you need surgery. He said, if you're 80, he goes, but if you want to raise your arm above your head again, you need to have this fixed. And so then I had to come to terms with, I need surgery. And by the time my surgery took place, I had Medicaid been approved. People are like, that doesn't happen in a week's time. That just doesn't happen. It happened for me. And I didn't know anything. Yeah, that is how my higher power works. Did it know that when Rondi asked me to sponsor her 2 years prior that I would need her in that way? Heck yeah. Heck yeah, my higher power is always looking out for me. But we look out for each other, and I have no idea where I was going with all of that, but it was going somewhere. Where was I going with that? I guess, I don't even know where I am with time. How are we on time? Oh, wow, I did not think, what time is this start? At 9? I did not think I'd fill up an hour. Okay, great, this is a great place to stop then. Okay. Oh, I do want to say, because I was talking about my brother. So I had my brother for another 2 years. And I got to walk him to his death this year. He had his surgery, and it was all good, but it was a bad cancer, and it comes back a lot. And he didn't make it. But I had him from the time of his accident. I got him another 18 years. And then I got to be there with him at the very end. And I know he's with me today because I talk to him all the time. And he never drank again after the accident. Like, he's alcoholic. For him, it wasn't AA. For him, it was a brain injury, and I don't drink anymore. And that is when my dad stopped drinking too. My dad didn't drink after his accident either. No program. But Kayla and I have brought 12 steps to our family for the first time, to bring 12 steps to this family. And so I know how impactful they are, and I don't know that I expressed that enough, but they have changed my life. I'm super grateful for them. I wouldn't be me without them. I'm not the me that I was. And I'm always looking to grow. And I always know my higher power is with me and will give me what I need. And I believe that for other people. I was talking to someone about how they feel sorry for homeless people. And I said, you know what? I don't judge that either. They have their journey. I don't know what they're here to learn. You know, why? I don't feel sorry for people anymore. You get what you need. We're always getting what we need. And so I'm going to, this gratitude thing that I wrote, this is one I wrote. I always finish with today I am grateful. That's my tagline, today I am grateful. I wrote this one day, it was a couple Christmases ago. Today I'm grateful, such powerful words when said slowly and with thought, pausing after each one. Today I am grateful. It's a statement, a state of being that can be brought forth with intent and remembrance for each time I was picked up, for all the support I've received, for the teachers that have appeared, for the grace that has been given. It is a declaration for all that is good, even amidst the difficult, finding the glimmer, creating a shift in focus from lack to abundance. And if abundance is out of reach, then enough will do. Always needed these words. Today, I am grateful. Thank you.